Hey everybody, it's JD here. We just pulled into the parking lot at Salami Studios in North Hollywood, California. We're getting ready to go inside. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Kristen. Say hi.
Hi.
And in case you don't know, she is the voice at the beginning of every episode of ATC. Let's go inside. It's a beautiful day here in Hollywood this morning. Walking up to the studio entrance. We'll check in with you again later.
And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker. Most folks around here call me Whit. My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hello, I'm JD.
And I'm Roy.
And I'm Andrew.
Welcome to Audio Theater Central. This is the show that's all about family-friendly audio drama. This is episode 58. Now, we love talking about what we like to call the top three. Adventures in Odyssey, Focus on the Family Radio Theater, and Lamplighter Theater. And today, we're going to jump into a Focus on the Family Radio Theater production, as well as we're going to get into some highlights from our visit to Salami Studios to attend an Adventures in Odyssey recording session. We've got an interview with sound designer Nate Jones. Oh my goodness, we've asked so much in this episode. Do you think we can squeeze in a newscast, Roy?
Barely. Just barely. Yeah.
Get the shoehorn.
Yeah.
Well, take it away.
Lamplighter Theater has announced a brand new series that they're calling Lamplighter Theater Classics. The first production to be released under the Classics brand are remastered versions of a series of 10 dramatized Bible stories called You Are There. For more info on this series, click the link in the show notes. Jonathan Park, Volume 10, The Journey Home, has been released and is now available for purchase. Also now available is In Freedom's Cause, the second drama from Heirloom Audio's Extraordinary Adventures of G.A. Henty series. That's it for the news this time. I'm Roy reporting for Audio Theater Central.
Fantastic.
That's what we call a stellar performance.
Shoehorned in there.
Exactly. Shoehorned, yes.
Good thing the whole foot and mouth thing didn't happen.
Shoehorn and mouth.
Yes.
Oh, also, in the future, be looking for a review of In Freedom's Cause, because being faithful and, in service of you, the home listener, we have already, well, most of us, two of us, 67% of us, have already finished this audio drama, and I gotta say, I'm really excited to review this one. Oh, man.
Exactly. A lot of stuff coming out right now. We've got album 58 of Odyssey wrapping up. We've got these Lamplighter, Jonathan Park, and the Brinkman Adventures is going to be releasing season 3 very soon. So, tons of stuff. Things are happening in the family-friendly audio drama world.
Yes, finally, it's been the summer of... The summer. It's been the summer of starvation. Whoa! It has been the summer of starvation. Summer and sort of fall. But, of course, we had Adventures in Odyssey, so not completely, but hey.
Well, let's talk about Salami Studios, guys.
Wait, are we just going to talk about Salami Studios, or are we going to talk?
And the salami that we had at Salami Studios.
Exactly.
We did. It was fantastic.
Yeah, great salami. Yes.
No joke. I'm telling the truth. They did have salami there.
Very true. Was it good, JD? Because I think you were the only one that partook.
No, I ate some of it.
Oh, you partook?
Yeah.
It was good.
Okay, so I got to tell just a snippet, right?
A snippet.
Yes. I got up at, well, I don't know, an ungodly hour. It was terrible. Drove for miles to get stuck in LA traffic. and pull into Salami Studios about an hour after JD got there. And these guys were feasting all over the place with salami and that. And I didn't eat breakfast on the way out. I didn't eat lunch. I didn't eat nothing until I left. And then I was forced to eat McDonald's on the way out of town. So
a travesty.
Yeah, McDonald's plus a long drive. You know, it's just.
You should have tried the boiling crab. You should have told me at the boiling crab. It was really good.
Wow. Well, yeah. Since we're talking about food, if you're ever in
check
LA,
this out. JD had like the classic food.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We went to a place. Kristen and I stopped by a place called the Meat District. Fantastic. She had just an amazing steak. And I had a huge hamburger. I love burgers. So.
Oh, me too. Man. McDonald's serves a thing. It's sort of like a burger, I guess. Anyway, we sort of have gotten off track here, haven't we?
Salami Studios. Yeah, what were we there for? Yeah, Adventures in Odyssey recording. All right.
Exactly. And they were actually recording the last few episodes for the 2015 OAC season. Yeah. So
they're ahead of schedule. And we can't tell you nothing about it. So there.
That's right.
We can say that they were recording an episode called A Daughter's Love, and then a three-parter called The Cure. And this is not anything new. If you've been keeping an eye on the Odyssey Facebook page, which they post all kinds of updates on there, and you don't even have to be a member of Facebook to check out their public postings. So that's kind of cool.
So just
go ahead.
Building off of that, if you scroll through the Facebook postings, you will see a picture of three random dudes in Salami Studios. That's us.
Exactly.
Back in, what was it, October 21st?
22nd? There's a link in the show notes to that post, so if you want to
see there that you go. Photo. Perfect. I knew JD would have us covered. It's great.
So, I mean, as you heard there at the beginning of the show, we arrived in the morning. Things kick off about 9 a.m., and we got to meet some really cool people just hanging out there in the lobby or the green room, whatever you want to call it. And the first person we got to meet was Michaela Dean, the voice of Camilla Parker. So that kind of kicked off our morning. So I don't want to hog the mic, guys. What else, who else did we get to meet?
Agent Borland.
Yeah, yes. We did. We met Agent Borland. We met a new character.
Yeah.
That we've never heard before,
Kiff.
Heard from before in Odyssey. And wow.
Is that who you're talking about?
Kiff. Yes, Kiff is his name.
Can this guy act or what?
Oh, man. He was amazing to watch. Of course, you know, obviously everyone was amazing in the studio, but we also spent a little time with Katie Lee. As our faithful listeners will know, we met her a little bit ago, but we re-met her again and spent some time with her. Let's see, who else? Roy? Who else did we meet?
Of course, we met Wooten.
Jess Harnell.
We'll save him. Jones. We'll save him for the last. Yeah, and Vinny and Jones.
Oh, man.
We met so many people. Of course, we met the whole crew there. You know, Dave Arnold, Phil Lawler, Nathan Hubler.
Yes.
Nate Jones.
Bob Smithhauser. Jonathan Crowe.
I mean, it was just.
Jonathan Crowe.
Yes.
Guys, like. One of the original team.
Original. Yeah. And it was
Jonathan Crowe.
Fabulous. Man. The whole experience was just incredible.
These are some of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah. It's a family. Like when they talk about like the whole family, you could definitely feel it and definitely tell. So
yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It was just like every single person was so nice. Even the staff of Salami Studios.
Even the staff. Yeah. I felt like they're part of the family too.
Yeah. So a shout out to Jessica at Salami Studios. She was super nice. Got to chat with her for a while. And of course, the whole experience, we got to see, we didn't get to meet every cast member just because, you know, they were coming in and out and didn't get to really talk with all of them. But Melissa Disney was there. Gary Reed, the voice of Jeff Lewis.
And if you do not know what he looks like, Google him or something and check him out because he will blow your mind because he blew my mind.
He does. I can't. You watch him talk and you have no idea how that voice could come out of that guy.
Exactly.
He doesn't look anything like his voice.
And
kind of like Connie Kendall.
Exactly. Yeah.
Correct.
There's a link in the show notes to the photo album of all the pictures of the people we got to meet and just some shots of the studio. If you want to go check that out. link in the show notes, audiotheatercentral.com/58. Now, we know Melissa Disney was the voice of Monica Stone.
Yes.
But Will commented on our post with the photo album, and he said, I think that she also played Victoria in Wooing Wooten. And I had forgotten about that.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was just it was just an amazing day. I mean,
starstruck. Boy, wow. These are the guys, and I say guys meaning everyone, right?
Yeah.
Being very inclusive. These are the folks that we've listened to all our lives, right? It's amazing. It's just, it's hard to put into words. I know that's kind of what we do here is talk, right?
Yeah.
But it's hard to put this into words. Oh, my word. Just being able to meet these people is absolutely incredible. And to see the process, oh, man, yeah. It's amazing to see no music, no sound effects, and some of these folks, just with their voice, could bring you to tears.
Oh, yeah.
Just acting out, just reading lines off of a page. Oh, speaking of lines off a page, I see something hanging in the corner, JD.
Oh, yeah. Saw that on the wall.
Yes. We have the script for The Cure, right?
Yes.
Signed by five of the folks there, Dave Arnold, Jess Harnell, Keith, who plays Agent Borland, and Jonathan Crowe, of course. So if you ever get the opportunity to go, take it.
I just wish Nathan had signed it. I realized that he didn't. So.
True. But that it's a treat. It really is. And the folks there are so nice.
Huge, huge thank you to Dave and Nathan Hubler especially. I mean, they just... I mean, of course, Dave is the executive producer. He did not have to allow us to come, and it was just amazing that he allowed us to come by and hang out with him for a day.
And one big one, sorry, I know we're about to move on here, but one big one that we met was Phil Lawler. He was in the director's chair for one of the episodes, so that was amazing to watch him work. And of course, Dave Arnold was in the director's chair as well as the executive producer chair at the same time for one of these. So it was pretty cool to see, to watch them direct and pull what they needed out of these actors. It's just incredible.
That was one of the highlights for me. It was just really cool to, in fact, Jonathan at the end of the day asked us, well, what did you think about him? And was there anything that you didn't expect to see? And what were the highlights? And that was the thing that popped in my head was, it was just so neat to watch these directors work and see how they were able to just get the exact emotion that they needed. But you mentioned Katie a little bit ago. Well, we had a chance to just chat with her and ask her a fun question. So here's Katie Lee.
So the question is, if you could jump in the imagination station and travel to any era in history, where would it be and why?
I think I would like to go back to the time when Cain went to find a wife, because I still can't figure out where she came from. So I would like to see how that whole thing worked.
Good answer.
That's an awesome
So that was fun. A little bit of background noise out there. We were standing outside, but hopefully that didn't detract from...
Not at all.
I have to say, before we move on again... The Katie Lee is probably one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. Most friendly, outgoing, doesn't meet a stranger. It was hilarious to see, you know, folks walk in that were working on other projects that were being recorded there. I don't think anybody walked in or out of the door that she didn't stop and talk to them.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It was such a neat experience.
It was a blast. I think that kind of sums it up. It was a blast.
That's right.
Well, today we're going to talk about Focus on the Family Radio Theater's production called The Legend of Squanto. Here in America, we're about to come up to Thanksgiving Day, and this is kind of the history, the very beginnings of the Thanksgiving holiday here in America. So we thought it was kind of fitting to take a look at this production at this time of the year. If you're listening in other countries, I know Canada has a Thanksgiving Day, and other countries probably do have similar holidays, so it's applicable everywhere.
Yes, no doubt.
Now, I'm not 100% sure when this one was released. I know this was one of their earlier productions. It's been around for a long time because I heard it for the first time probably 15 years ago or maybe not quite that long ago, but it was quite some time ago. So it's about an hour and a half long. So it's not real, real long, but it is a great, great drama just to sit down with the whole family at this time of year and just sit back, relax, and listen to this amazing story, which Andrew is going to tell us a little bit about.
Ah, yes, of course. Also, just as an added note, these actually originally came out on tape, cassette tape.
Whoa.
So they're ancient.
I was going to say, I think I remember listening to these when I was like a kid, like a long time ago.
Yeah, very long. This one's been out for a long time.
No, but like, you know, at least like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that 15 year thing is like accurate.
Or less, or even more. So the summary of this is as follows. History remembers Tisquantum as the Native American who taught early settlers to fish and farm. He's even credited with the first Thanksgiving. But few hear the story of the condemnation that dragged him outside America to a life in chains and what he discovered after his exile. It's the inspiring true story of this little-known early American that triumphed over injustice and changed what would become the United States. But the legend of Squanto is more than just a tale about an honest man who triumphed over tragedy. It is also a tribute to honor, integrity, and the God-given ability to look beyond the color of one's skin and into the heart.
Beautiful.
Well done there, Andrew.
Yes, I learned much while we were over at Salami Studios.
I think we all did.
Very poetic.
Yes.
No, I wrote it myself.
The delivery was perfect.
Can we get a safety on that, please?
I have one question that I have to start out with, though, is why is it called the legend of Squanto? Because a legend implies that it's not necessarily true.
Interesting.
I don't know if all of the facts are factual. I don't know if every part of the story is factual, I guess is the way I should say
it. It's very oxymoronic of you, man.
Right. Hey, don't call me a moron. My goodness. Or an ox. Whoa. So I'm not really sure if that's why they call it the Legend of Squanto. Squanto definitely was a real person, that's for sure. And he definitely assisted the pilgrims. The first pilgrims, right? The ones who settled Jamestown, correct?
Plymouth.
Plymouth, yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Way off. Anyway, so...
it's only at the end of the story, Andrew. Just don't give it away. No, just these.
Yes. Nobody look in your history books or you'll see spoilers everywhere. Needs to be very careful about that. So, anyway.
Sorry.
So, unlike what's being taught in our lovely school system here in America, that that the first pilgrims were the first terrorists of the United States. No, that is not a joke, okay? Or of North America, excuse me. That genuinely is being taught in places around here. This actually gives a more accurate depiction of what happened, right? So these were people who loved God, who left their, you know, their native lands to go seek a place where they could worship God in any way that they chose, and befriended those that were here, right, already. So, and specifically, it's the story of, obviously, Squanto, who was probably the best friend that the pilgrims had.
And I looked up one definition of legend, and it's an extremely famous or notorious person, especially in a particular field. The man was a living legend.
There you go. Okay. It's not the legend of Squanto as it's, in,
yeah,
you know, a
traditional story sometimes. Story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's...
The legend.
The man.
The man.
The legend. Squanto.
To Squantum.
Okay. That makes sense.
I guess.
If that's what
it's one explanation.
That's one definition.
So it was written and directed by Paul McCusker, produced by Dave Arnold. I saw in one source, although this was not an official source, so I'm not 100% sure of its accuracy, but that Todd Busteed and Mark Drury helped out with the sound on this, but they don't, they're not listed in the credits of the audio, so
it's a legend.
Music composed by John Campbell.
Ooh, surprise, surprise.
Yeah. And it was fantastic, as always. I mean, like you said, it's not, you're not going to give away anything. We know the story from history.
Right.
But it's just, it's a great retelling of this story where they kind of fill in some of the blanks that we don't necessarily get from history textbooks. Especially about Squanto or Tisquantum's time in Spain and England. Those to me were some of the most intriguing scenes to me personally. Now, there was something interesting about this one, though, is it's pretty heavy on narration. And
that's true.
William Roberts played the part of Massasoit, who was one of the big chiefs. I forget the tribe name, but who he's like a main character who was at that first Thanksgiving celebration there. But he acts as a narrator for this story and just does a phenomenal job.
But it is kind of neat that the narrator was an actual character in the story.
I was going to point the same thing out.
It's very helpful.
It's really neat.
So it kind of makes it a little different than, say, Chronicles of Narnia, which is not as heavy on the narration, but still it's sprinkled throughout. But it's a detached narrator.
Right.
Whereas this one, you know, even his style of narration is, it's obvious that he's seen the events that are going on, which is super cool.
And he is playing a character even as he's narrating. I mean, his voice inflections and the word usage in that narration, you can totally tell that he is in the part of Massasoit as he's narrating.
Yeah. Our brothers.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very cool.
They kind of use the same thing in Ben-Hur, if I'm not mistaken. The narrator at the very end kind of turns into one of the characters.
Yeah, that's true. Seneca.
Seneca, yeah.
Seneca of Rome.
Yeah.
Was narrating the story to Nero.
Yes.
We also have the same thing in Les Mis because we have Valjean, who is narrating through the whole story.
True.
So I don't know. And at first I was going to say maybe that's a Paul McCusker thing, but no, because Philip Glassboro wrote Les Mis, correct? Right.
I think it's a really cool technique. I really like it when that happens.
It can be done really well. I mean, we talked about this kind of issue of narration in our audiobook versus audio drama episode, and it can be done really well or it can be done very terribly.
Yeah.
You have to know what you're doing if you're going to use a narrator.
I think one of the best examples of it has been Ben-Hur.
You know, it's been so long since I've heard Ben-Hur, I can't even recall that.
It becomes part of the story. It's super cool. I really love the way that they do that in Ben-Hur. But that's not what we're reviewing today. But actually, this story kind of does the same thing because at a certain point, you catch up to the present kind of when he's telling the story. And then the story continues for a little bit beyond that, which is really cool.
And also, not only is this telling the story of Squanto and his struggle with coming to terms with being kidnapped by the white man and then having to forgive them and then in turn helping them out, but there's also a little bit of an underlying theme, at least in the first half, of the friction between Catholicism and Protestantism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true.
Well, that's an interesting little theme that they kind of wove into the story as well.
Why don't you all get along? Well, we just don't get along.
He's like, it's too difficult.
We all serve the same one. I don't forget how he says it, but and we don't. You're all just a big family, then, right? You all just get along, or however you know the English guy. And he's, well, it's just the way it is, just Squanto.
Yeah, it is really cool because Squanto is introduced to Christianity through a Spanish Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm.
But he also receives the Anglican influence when he ends up in England. So right. He kind of gets it from both sides and ends up with a sort of middle of the road view, I guess. It's an interesting dynamic.
So he ends up in Plymouth with that Puritan kind of a viewpoint. So.
Right, exactly. He gets everything that was going on at the time. The Puritans left England because of the Anglican Church, right? So he ends up friends with everybody.
Yeah.
There is one funny line that, well, there's more than one, but there's one that stuck out to me is when he is first rescued by Father Juan in Spain, and he's Father Juan, the Spanish priest, is going to send him away to a monastery where he will be safe. And he brings his other servant into the room and he tells him, you know, take him over there. And so the other servant starts talking to Squanto and he's all enunciating and speaking really loudly
and slowly.
And slowly. And Father Juan says to him, he's an Indian, Miguel, not an idiot. And another line that stood out to me is from Mr. Slaney, who kind of takes him in London. And it kind of goes back to that whole discussion about Catholics versus Protestants or the Anglican Church or whatever. And Squanto is just struggling to understand this whole concept of God. And Mr. Slaney says to him, God is bigger than our world, yet small enough to fit in your heart.
Yeah, that was really cool.
So you think about that for a while.
Yeah, that'll keep you thinking now, yeah. Won't it?
As always, the production values for Focus on the Family Radio Theater, to me, it's almost like it's not even worth mentioning because it's so top-notch. We know that it's going to be fantastic.
It's the standard, right? It's the gold bar. It really is,
yeah. The script, amazing. Paul nailed each character and their voice just perfectly. And the acting, of course, it was recorded at the Soundhouse in London. All of the professional actors did a fantastic job. Peter Brook was Squanto and just did an amazing job with that character, I thought.
I never would have known that an English person was, or a British subject, or whatever they are. We love you, British folks. I never would have known that he was a Britisher.
Yeah, did a very good American accent.
Well, American and American Indian, right?
Yeah.
So it's amazing. I guess original American accents, right?
There was one scene that was really kind of poignant, and that was the scene with Captain Dermer and Squanto as they're sitting around that campfire and just kind of talking over the things about his anger towards the man who kidnapped him, and just there's just a real great the conversation there. It just there's a lot going on there, kind of underlying every line. You can feel what's going on there, and it's just the sound, the acting, the writing all just meshes perfectly in that scene for me, and I thought it was really fantastic. Any scenes that really stood out to you guys?
Nah.
It's just a whole package deal.
That's right.
So. Yeah.
The whole thing. The whole thing stood out to me.
Yeah. As a whole. I liked it as a whole. Not one scene over another, really.
That's right. It all flows together.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's one particular part where, again, Squanto is dealing with these different emotions of what happened to his life, how it was just basically taken away from him. And he comes back to America and his family had been taken, you know, they were all gone. And he says, I'm a man who belongs to no tribe. Am I an Indian? No. The English took care of that. Am I an Englishman? No. I am all that is left of a dead people. What can I be but a tongue for others? With no tongue of my own. Wow, that just kind of captures the whole essence of his character.
Yeah.
For probably a good three quarters of the story. Wow.
It's powerful.
So in short, I say you must listen to The Legend of Squanto.
For this Thanksgiving.
On Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, pick up a copy of this drama and enjoy it with your friends and family.
You can grab a digital copy on Amazon or Christian Book or iTunes. Or if you're a member of the OAC,
Correct. I was hoping you would mention that. If you wouldn't have, I would have interrupted you as usual and said it myself. if you're a member of the OAC, you can, they have it on there for Thanksgiving. So, yeah, so it's pretty cool that they uploaded that one, you know, and I had no idea. My wife said, oh, are you guys reviewing the one that's up on the Odyssey Adventure Club? I have no idea. So it's really cool. They are throwing in some really nice bonuses in there, and join up. It's my advice to you. Join up. It's really awesome.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, we got to chat with sound designer and recording engineer Nate Jones when we were in Hollywood, and he was just an amazingly fun guy to talk to. So we got to interview him, and he talks about his work on radio theater and Adventures in Odyssey. He specifically mentions the Screwtape Letters, the Green Ring Conspiracy, one of the OAC episodes called The Lone Lawman, and the radio theater production of The Hiding Place. Now, we had a lot of fun chatting with him, but I got to warn you, the conversation does get a little geeky. So if you're not really into all of the behind the scenes of sound design, just skip ahead about 18 and a half minutes and join us back for the feedback segment. But if you do like all of those details and microphone placements and techniques and all of this kind of stuff, then you definitely want to stick around and listen to this. Before I play this, I wanted to also mention that we started chatting with him inside the studio, and there was a lot of conversation going on behind us. And then we transitioned into another area of the studio where the actors actually record. And the reason I tell you this is because I left it in the transition as we were walking, because Nate just made it a joke about how we were moving, and we had the sound effect of the studio door opening and closing. So I just wanted to leave that in there just because I thought it was kind of fun. So here we go. Here's our interview with Nate Jones.
What was the most difficult sound effect that you've had to create so far for either radio theater or Odyssey?
I think the best way to phrase it would be, how hard is it to make things believable so that people don't question it, whatever you do? I think that's sort of the position that I take with just about anything. Because I think if I do my job right, nobody notices it. And if I do my job wrong, then I haven't, you know.
Then everybody notices it.
Yeah, you'll hear it. You'll hear it sound fake. And I think the thing that I really, really try to do is to make things just so passable and believable that it either fits exactly what we're trying to communicate in a scene or a story. So whatever it takes, you know, because there are some things that some sound effects we make that have nothing to do with what you're actually hearing, but they produce the same thing. So when Screwtape turns into a centipede, it's actually a bowl of spaghetti that I'm playing with. I'm rubbing my fingers through oily spaghetti so that it gets that constant squishy sound, or playing with oatmeal and squishing it between my fingers and things like that. But those are things that have nothing to do with an oozing caterpillar.
Well, what's the weirdest thing you've had to, I mean, that spaghetti's pretty weird, but
that's pretty weird. I think the weirdest was my very first show, which was Sunday Morning Scramble. And Bart Rathbone is left alone in this house, and he ends up eating like some cayenne pepper or something in someone's cabinet, and he goes to wash his mouth out, and the only thing he can find is the fishbowl.
I remember that scene.
So what you guys heard was the approved version, okay? My version, because what Walker gave us in the scene was that he actually either threw up the fish or swallowed the fish, one of the two, but I chose to take it in the route of him throwing up a fish, because he sticks his head in the fishbowl to cool off his tongue, and he comes up out of it. And when I actually did the original scene, I've got it on CD somewhere back at the office, but originally I had him sound like he barfed up a whole fish back into the fish bowl.
Yeah.
So that's the oddest, weirdest sound that I've ever come up with.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, and that was funny because he didn't make the sounds of somebody going, you know? So I took my voice and matched it up with his and created the sound and then made a, I don't know, I dropped something in the fish bowl and make it sound like, and then like, you hear this. This fishbowl and the fishbowl, yeah. So that was a strange one. Outside of that, I just think ultimately the idea for the sound design is to, it's just to communicate all the right things so that the brain can fill in the gaps. Because in a movie, you have visual cues. You can hear somebody walking or, go. You know, if they're in an alleyway, then the reverb works. And, you know, your brain kind of fills in the gaps because you see people moving and doing things. But in audio drama, you don't have visual cues. So you really have to make sure that the things that you do trigger the information in the brain to say, okay, this person did this or did that. Or if you've got somebody literally standing there with his arms crossed kicking the ground, well, you have to kind of give that sound sometimes of them kind of looking down and kind of kicking the ground. Otherwise, we don't see that picture.
Is there ever a time when the absence of a sound effect is more powerful than actually having something there where you might expect on first pass, well, we need to have this in here, but then as you maybe reanalyze the scene, you figure out, well, it's maybe the absence of this might actually convey the message a little better.
Yeah, I think that may probably fall under. That might,
A little quieter.
Audio, you would have a conversation.
That might be fun to have that back there. Anyway, well, we can go in here. We can go step out.
And this is us walking into the studio.
Oh, perfect door.
Yeah. So I think for sound effects being absent and making a better impact, I don't know that it's so much about sound effects. I think sometimes when a vocal cue from an actor is absent, you know, the biggest example of this would be like in comedic timing where someone says something and then everybody else that's in the scene is just kind of just long enough, you know, for the crickets to chirp. And then we all understand that that's funny. But for sound effects, I think it's more on subtlety. I would say that some of the subtle things would be like if you know someone is doing something outside of a scene and it's going to be referenced in the script later, you can have that play out really, like in a, you know, all the high frequencies gone kind of subtlety. And then we sort of hear that and we got an idea of what might be happening, but then that person comes in the scene and then it's revealed as to what they were doing. And I think that gives a listener a good, oh, that's the tie-in. You know,
sure.
You get it. Because I think one of the things that we do with Odyssey and Radio Theater is we try not to underestimate the listeners. We don't want to hit you guys over the head with something and drag you around by the nose. We want you to be able to kind of discover things and not feel like we're trying to drive something home, you know, in a forceful way, trying to get you to hear this or, you know,
well, and
subtleties.
We've kind of talked about it recently on the show is that one of the benefits of this medium of audio drama is that there's so much that can be left to the listener's imagination, and everybody can form those pictures differently. Mm-hmm. And if everything was so blatant and in your face, then there wouldn't be a whole lot for the imagination.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly the point, is that you're trying not to underestimate everybody. Oh, if we don't make this sound effect so loud, then nobody's going to get it. You know, but the truth is that if you're listening to a scene and something's passing through as it should be, and then a little something pops out somewhere, you're gonna key in on that.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's more how I address that question in the long way. So,
sure. Yeah. Stereo mic when you're recording footsteps?
No, not footsteps.
Okay.
No, because when you can do it if you're really. If you do things in stereo, then what you're doing is you're calling an attention to lifting something off the page.
Sure.
I've done stereo sound effects with in screw tape letters, where screw tape opens up the scroll and you hear it go.
Sure.
And it's a deliberate thing that I had to make because you couldn't just find that sound effect. So I went and got like an old Whole Foods bag and crumpled it up a few times and made what would be like a parchment or a scroll kind of sound out of it. And literally, I did a stereo miking to where I unrolled the scroll from left to right or whichever direction I did it in the show. But
nice.
But that calls attention. That makes something special. out of, you know, if you just had a mono point source for somebody opening up a scroll, and then it just sounds like we're listening to somebody open up something over there.
Right.
But when you do things in stereo, you're lifting something off the page. You're now taking it off of the sound stage that you've created, and you're saying, okay, this is a special thing when it goes into stereo. Because I think you have to use the stereo field to help communicate special things or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. What's typically your mic placement for, like, recording the footsteps?
You know, I'm not so sure that it's about that. I think I've experimented with even just doing, you know, could I do the whole personal Foley of somebody or some character just using one mic?
Right. That's
fine. Yeah, I actually tried that. And it does do an interesting perspective. You don't feel like you're right up on the person, and the footsteps sound a little more believable. The problem is you lose the subtleties. So that's where that's at. I mean, I've done shotgun miking on myself. Right. I've done close miking on the feet. Okay. But I think ultimately the game of what you're trying to do is you're trying to communicate not only the person, no matter how you record it, you're trying to record what they're doing. You're trying to get the subtleties, and you're also trying to make it sound like it fits in the scene so that footsteps aren't boomy or they're not too clacky or, you know, is this the right shoe for this person? I mean, we at Focus, you know, we've got a set of fake staircase that goes up the side of the wall and it's full of shoes. Awesome. Yeah, it really looks like a frat house that blew up. I mean, there's just shoes and stuff everywhere, but the shoes are an interesting thing because we come in and we say, look, these are all the shoes that we use, and people are like, oh, well, and some people don't care, but the reality is you've got to pick the right thing for the right person.
Sure,
Mr. Whitaker wears different shoes than Connie.
Yeah, he sure does. Right. And a matter of fact, I can do a Mr. Whitaker fine, but when I have to play a female, the problem is I'm, you know, 200 pounds, and, you know, the problem is I can't sound like a small female. Mm-hmm. So I have to put on really tight, small, little Italian leather shoes that take my weight and makes it sound smaller.
Sure.
So that's very important. And of course, the way you walk and the way you do things.
Yeah.
So.
How much of the sound effects are canned versus actual, like, fully done?
Some of the canned stuff would be, like, you know, birds, city environments, things that have, like, millions of sources of sound.
Sure.
Those are things that we would go to for sound effects, you know, as far as like ambiences and things like that. Other things could be like wagons, some doors from cars, you know, because there are sound effects libraries where people have already gone out and done that kind of work.
Sure.
And it's right. For something that just goes that quick.
Yeah.
So there's no reason for me to grab a whole, you know, mobile pack and go out to my car and record my car. However, we have done complete scenes with our own cars. I think it was in Green Ring Conspiracy. I don't know if you guys have seen the video where...
You're driving around in the pickup?
Yeah, well, they were driving around in the pickup. It was Chris Deal and Dave Arnold doing the scene with Skint and Buck Oliver in the truck. And what they did was Chris pre-edited the scene, and we played the scene live in the truck while they drove down the road, and that became the sound or the Foley of the interior of the truck for them driving. Well, I was laying on the hood videotaping that video. So that was me hanging on to the – I was on the hood of the truck videotaping the whole thing as they were going down. And what we did is we took the scene and we put it in sync with that video. And that's how we did that. So
nice.
I was videotaping the take that was going to be used on the release.
Wow.
So that's how we did that.
That's
you can actually put the two together and they sync right up.
Yeah.
I recently heard an indie producer in the UK talking about some of the – sound effects libraries that are out there, that the quality of them, I mean, you pay a pretty hefty price and the quality of them are not really that great. Have you had that experience?
Yeah, I think some of the old stuff that might have been recorded via analog, some of the stuff that, you know, that's in some of the older libraries that kind of hit tape back in the days and, you know, it just doesn't have the same dynamic range. It doesn't have the same clarity. And you lose some of the, you know, well, not some, but you lose a lot of detail. Yeah, I've heard that kind of stuff for sure, but you have to kind of work around it, you know? You have to kind of – some of those things work, some of them don't. I think it really just kind of boils down to you having, you know, what I would call an X factor, if you will, to be able to sit down and go, okay, this works, this doesn't work, you know, because everybody hears things differently. And sometimes the show requires a different type of sound effect. Like when we did The Lone Lawman, I think is what it was.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Well, that one had that we had liberties with that because Dave was okay with it sounding like it was an old school audio drama. You know, like sure. like right off the radio.
Yeah.
So it's okay to use old sound effects because everybody's like, yeah, that works. Yeah, we can accept that because, well, yeah, it's old school.
Yeah.
And the Foley was minimal. The sound effects were just kind of canny sounding. And, you know, like the horse running up was just, you know, it was just really sort of.
But know. It was on purpose.
Yeah, but it was on purpose. It still tells the story.
Yeah.
But it's acceptable because, you know, because it is what it is. However, you can't have something like that in a more high fidelity sounding show.
Right. Yeah, so a few minutes ago you were talking about some of the links you guys went to get some of the sound effects for mm-hmm. the radio theater production of Hiding Place.
Yeah, so when we did The Hiding Place, we were finishing up The Hiding Place in London by getting crowd scenes for The Hiding Place show, or the drama. And then also while we were there, we were doing a Father Gilbert. So we basically had the idea, okay, well, we're going to be staying in London over the weekend into another week. So why not see if we can get this weekend that we're going to have open and go just take a quick, you know, hop over to Holland and see if we can actually get into Corey Ten Boom's house and record things like the door, the actual buzzer that they rang, what the kitchen sounded like, what the house sounded like, you know, what's it like to be in this room with people out on the street below. You know, those are all real legit sounds that we were able to get by having the ability to go there. So we spent a Saturday doing work there, and we spent a Sunday recording stuff there. And they were, you know, gracious enough to let us have the run of the house. So in doing that, we were able to capture all those important things. There's two scenes in particular where we set up a stereo microphone. The first one is everybody sitting around the dinner table. And they ring the doorbell to do this test run to see if all these people at this dinner setting can take their dishes and get away and hide in a certain amount of time. So that's the actual buzzer that you hear. And then what we did was we set up the stereo mic in the dining room as you would ear height listening to the dining table. And then we did like 12 takes of that, or maybe 6 takes of that because it was Dave and I. And by layering it, we were able to get the sound of what it sounds like to have 12 people leave a table and take their dishes and run and hide up the spiral staircase. So all that boominess that you hear in the house, all that dish sound, all of that stuff is sort of us really going through a great length to give you a very authentic sound of the dining room, you know, because a lot of people aren't going to be fortunate enough to go hear Corey Ten Boom's house. Yeah. So for us, you know, as an audio geek, you know, that's like, yeah, I'm super geeking out on this because, you know, this is really legit,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so that's the beauty of that. So if you listen to that scene, you'll hear what sounds like 12 people leaving, but it's actually 6 takes of Dave and I sitting in different positions at this table and picking up our dishes and scooting out and running up this spiral staircase. I mean, it was a nightmare for Jonathan to mix.
Oh, I bet.
But that was the idea. The other one was we set the stereo mic up in Corey Ten Boom's room because in the middle of the night, the SS guys or the Gestapo or whatever come running up this spiral staircase and bust into her door to arrest her and to get her. And so if you listen to that scene, you can hear footsteps developing up the stairs, even onto the flat in front of her door. And you hear that door open up and you hear the hinges and it's just got this old brr, 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 brr kind of sound and everything. And that was Dave Arnold and I running in, you know, as heavy as we could to get the sound. And that's the sound of bodies running into Corey Ten Boom's room, you know? And so that was pretty much the only way that we could think about, okay, some great authentic sound effects in the place. This is what it would have sounded like to the best of our ability. And of course, gun sounds or key sounds or clothing sounds, all of that stuff was added in later to get the sound of, you know, somebody being there. But the footsteps and the boominess, that's it.
And that's what sets Focus on the Family apart from other producers out there. I mean, you guys go the extra length to make sure it's top notch. And
yeah,
it always is. I mean, you guys do amazing work.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. But I think one of the things that we really try to do is that if we can order the main dish and get five courses with it, then, you know, who doesn't like that? So it's the same way. It's the same way with audio drama. You know, if we can do something that's extra special, then we think people will appreciate that too once they know the story. If you don't know the story, well, right, then Corrie ten Boom, The Hiding Place, you know, it plays right by and you don't right. get it. But if you know that the hiding place sliding door is actually the sliding door, and when you hear someone touching on the bricks to describe the wall, that's the wall. I mean, with, you know, there are just all those little things. The front door that you hear is the front door. And those are all really great things, even down to the buzzer that says, hey, Nazis are out at the front door. That buzzer or that bell, that's it.
You know? That's awesome.
So,
well, how about a fun question? If you could be any one of the Odyssey characters for a day, who would you choose and why?
Probably Wit.
Yeah?
Yeah, he just knows everything. The only problem, though, is that he just, nobody seems to pay for their drinks. I haven't figured that one out yet.
That's true. He doesn't make very much.
Very rarely you only hear a coin slide across the counter.
He's a humanitarian, yeah.
Yeah.
Free sodas for everybody.
Well, thank you very much, Nate, for chatting with us. That was so much fun talking with him.
No kidding. I agree with him. Free sodas for everybody.
Yeah.
Bring your own soda, free soda day.
It was a great time talking to him. Very helpful and willing to chat with us. It was great. So neat. And I, speaking of sodas, I had this thought the other day. When was the last time?
Oh, did you hold on to it? They're rare.
Yeah, I know. They are very rare. But once in a while, these hit me. Was the last time someone ordered a chocolate soda at Wit's End?
Oh, my goodness. A Wad Fam Chalk Sod?
Yeah, or just even a chocolate soda. You know, chocolate soda or Wad
Fam. You know. It's true. I don't know. I don't really like chocolate soda very much, so.
Anyway.
Is that like kind of like a Yoo-Hoo? Would that be considered a chocolate soda?
I think so.
We had chocolate soda.
We had Wad Fam Chalk Sod.
Here at the studio.
Those are good. Yeah. Mm. Homemade, they're much better than anywhere else.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
So, what do you think of the show?
Please leave your message after the tone.
Hi, Audio Theater Central.
Hey, guys, this is Austin Peachy.
Hello, JD, Roy, and Andrew. My name is Victoria.
Now, yesterday, I received a letter from a big fan.
No time to chat. I've got an email list.
Another package for me today.
No, it's actually just your mail.
It is the mail.
The mail from you, our loyal fans. Thank you for all the feedback that you send to us. We enjoy it, and we enjoy reading it and listening to it.
Oh, by the way, this is not in the lineup, but I just want to mention real quick. Emily did get back to us. She is not a Canadian.
Yes, I did see that.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Go ahead, Roy.
No. Kenzie J. commented on ATC 57, the Goliath review. I loved this story, ! I'm so glad that you touched on it. It's one of my favorites. Yes, Shadow Valley is a real place. She's answering our question. I think we had a question about this. Mm-hmm. Yes, Shadow Valley is a real place on the mountain because when they go hiking, CJ sees it and points it out to Papa Chuck. And you know what? I was just listening to a Paws and Tales recently, and I heard that same thing. It's like, oh, that's right.
I had completely forgotten about that scene when we were talking about it. So that was cool. Thanks for reminding us, Kinsey.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, we also got a voicemail. Love getting voicemails. This one was from Austin with some feedback on episodes 54 and 55.
Hey, JD, Roy, and Andrew. I just wanted to let you guys know how much I've enjoyed episodes 54 and 55. I was really excited to see you finally devote a whole episode to old-time radio. It was a really good discussion. I find it funny that I was first introduced to OTR through cassette tapes as well. I got them through my dad, the library, and other sources. I, too, remember listening to When Radio Was. It aired on a radio station in Salt Lake City, and I listened to it all the way in New Mexico. It started around 10 or 11 at night on Fridays. I eventually stopped because I got tired of staying up late and not hearing the shows I liked. It wasn't until much later that I found I could get virtually all old-time radio shows free online. I've been a fan ever since. Some of my favorite shows are Armis Brooks, The Great Gildersleeve, and Abbott and Costello. I mainly listen to the comedy shows, but I enjoy listening to The Lone Ranger, The Cisco Kid, and Hopalong Cassidy as well sometimes. It's been a long time since I've heard Paws and Tales. I was a big fan of it when it first came out when I was a kid. I believe the Goliath series is one of the best shows from them. If my memory serves me right, after the last part aired on the radio, a discussion with some of the writers and producers talked about the story and themes from it. My guess is that it's not included in the album. It went over some of the themes and parallels that you guys were talking about. One thing you guys mentioned is CJ being the one. It's obvious that the creative team was gearing up for CJ to find that out and doing what he was called to do. Unfortunately, I believe the Goliath series was the last, or some of the very last, radio episodes to be made. It's a shame they're only doing animated videos now. I had no idea that Chris Anthony played Marcia. I could not believe that when you guys said that. But now that I think about it, I can really tell it's her now. Anyway, thanks for continuing to make Audio Theater Central. It's truly one of the best podcasts out there today. Talk to you guys later.
Well, thank you, sir.
Oh, wow. We agree.
Some great points there, though. I would love to hear that little behind-the-scenes thing with the producers of Paws and Tails that he mentioned there. I would love to get my hands on that.
Yeah. Definitely. We should mention that we may have mentioned it in the show. I can't remember. But Marcia was played by Chris Anthony and a couple of other actors, I believe. So it's not exclusively her. I just recently purchased all the Christmas Paws and Tails episodes.
Whoa.
They have those bundled, and it's the most wonderful time of the year. So get them. Yeah. Christmas in Wildwood. So anyway, sorry. Hope we just didn't lose all our listeners. Probably did. Anyway, on a couple of them, I could definitely tell that it was Chris Anthony. And then on a couple of them, I could definitely tell that it was not. So it's not exclusively played by her. Or Marcia is not exclusively played by her, but she is in some of them as Marcia.
I also thought it was interesting how he mentioned that radio station. Chances are that was an AM station because AM signals can travel like way far, much farther than an FM signal. So if he was listening to a Salt Lake City station in New Mexico, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that is really
well, especially cool. At night that happens.
Yep. So. Well, thank you very much, Austin, for all of that feedback. We have one more piece of feedback here, Andrew. And it seems like it's kind of funny. It always seems like you end up reading Richard's feedback.
Yeah,
that's very true. We're just having a conversation back and forth because he usually calls me out. I love it. It's great. So he says, no, he didn't this time, though. Unfortunately, it makes it fun. Anyway, this is regarding Bill Hyde's article when we had our discussion with him on audio drama being more compelling than visual media. And Richard says, excellent article. I can totally see his point about audio drama being more engaging than visual media. Actually, Garrett Vandenberg made a similar point when Devin and Victoria Francis interviewed him on the Adventures in Odyssey podcast. He said that audio drama is the perfect balance between reading and watching. Reading makes you imagine almost everything, and watching doesn't let you imagine anything. Audio drama makes imagination easy. I do take issue with his statement that audio drama is a revolutionary new field. As whose statement was that?
That was
Bill. Is he referencing Bill? Or?
Yeah, Bill. Okay.
As you guys so aptly pointed out a couple of episodes back, audio drama has been with us for a long time. Maybe it hasn't been of this quality, but I think it's more of a rediscovery than an invention. I know that growing up, we didn't do TV or video. I occasionally listened to the audio of some interview-type things, and whenever someone asked us what we did for entertainment, we told them that we read and listened to stories. It's a perfectly legitimate source of edutainment for kids. I like that word.
Wow.
Thanks for this, Richard.
I like that word.
Well, edutainment. I like that word, too.
That's great.
Richard, we should say that we are largely in the same boat as you. Speaking for myself, we did not do TV or video either. So hence the reason that we are so into audio drama. It's a great form of entertainment, right?
Powerful media. Medium. Exactly.
Very. If you don't believe that, just listen to Lamplighter.
Yeah, exactly.
Powerful.
I love that comment, though, that he said that Garrett made. Audio drama is a perfect balance between reading and watching. That's pretty
definitely.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I also noticed the audio drama being a revolutionary field, new field. I don't recall exactly what Bill Hyde said. So
yeah, I don't recall exactly if he's mentioning something that he said in when we were speaking with him, or if that was something that was read or written in his article. But I'm assuming that what Bill was referring to it was like modern audio drama, what we know of as modern audio drama now as being revolutionary.
I think that there is a revolution in audio drama, is my feeling. The BBC obviously has never dropped it, but here in the United States, it died.
Yeah.
Basically, when old-time radio went away, right? When Johnny Dollar went off the air in 1964 or something like that, that was it, man. It was just a wasteland because, you know, TV took over everything. So I think we really are in the midst of a revolution of audio drama. It's coming back. It is a revival, but revival and revolution are very close words to each. You know, they're very related words. So
a reawakening.
Sure.
I totally agree. There's a lot of high quality stuff coming out now. And I think probably one of the major factors, actually there are two major factors in this revival of this medium. And I think one is the ease of getting into it with computers now. It's so easy to just get some software and start creating. Now, you still have to have some knowledge and expertise and make sure you're putting out a good product, but it's much easier. You don't have to sit there and splice tape together and run it through a reel-to-reel.
Or buy, you know, $20,000, $50,000 worth of analog equipment before you can do anything. You just have to have a computer, right?
Exactly.
$200.
Exactly, yeah. And the second component, I think, is the internet.
No doubt.
It's just making it so much easier to distribute content and just to get the word out about the content that you're creating. So interesting discussion. Maybe we should, maybe we should talk about this a little bit more in a future episode. Last little piece of feedback here was, I thought it was cool. Christopher, a frequent commenter on the blog and sending in feedback, shared a picture with us of him and all of his Odyssey guides. So he owns all three of the guides that we talked about in our article on the blog. So that picture is in the show notes if you want to check that out. So thanks for sharing with us, Christopher. Well, guys, I think that'll do it for tonight.
Yeah. Or today.
Or whatever
hour
period of the day you're listening to this.
Season.
Guys, you're totally killing my sign off. I was going to say, and good night.
Oh, but, sorry. Oh. Do your rewind thing, Andrew.
Hey, one last word. If you want to join the ATC Insiders, we've got some really cool stuff that we're working on in the month of December that if you are a member of the ATC Insiders, you will hear about it first. I guarantee it. So go to audiotheatercentral.com. Check it out. Go to audiotheatercentral.com/58 for the links to everything we've talked about in this episode. And if you're in the United States, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Good night. Audio Theater Central is a production of Porchlight Family Media at porchlightfamilymedia.com.
All right. Opening the book, we come to the law book. All right. Here is the law book. This is the law. Okay. All right. So we are now in court. Court is now in session. A lawyer defending a man accused of burglary tried this creative defense. My client merely inserted his arm into the window and removed a few trifling articles. His arm is not himself, and I fail to see how you can punish the whole individual for an offense committed by his limb.
Well put, the judge replied. Using your logic, I sentence the defendant's arm to 1 year's imprisonment. He can accompany it or not, as he chooses. The defendant smiled.
With his lawyer's assistant, he detached his artificial limb, laid it on the bench, and walked out.
Oh. Totally not fair.
Gotta watch those lawyers.
Did you say lawyers or liars?
We'll never know. It might as well be the same thing.